For example.
Yeah. Now, in Germany, they have this concept called the Staatsraison, which really means, you know, the reason of the state. And understandably, to make amends for the Holocaust, Germany feels they have to do something. But they've interpreted that to mean just defend the Israeli government regardless of what it does, which I think is a huge mistake. What I've written about actually in the German press is that they should take from the Holocaust the importance of upholding rights that would prevent atrocities from like this from ever happening again. But you can't uphold rights and have a Palestinian exception, because then, you know, next there'll be a Jewish exception, and then there'll be exception for other people. And so the only way to do it is to uphold rights for everybody. That's not the German government's approach. They just think they're going to defend Netanyahu and the far-right extremists in the Israeli government, regardless of what they do. I think that's a misunderstanding of the proper lessons of the Holocaust.
And I think that's clear from your book. The overall message, never again, means never again for anyone, anywhere. Righting Wrongs is Kenneth Roth's new book, 3 decades on the front lines battling abusive governments. Kenneth Roth is now a visiting professor at the Princeton School of Public and International Affairs, served for nearly 3 decades as the executive director of Human Rights Watch. This is Democracy Now! To see the full speeches of the Palestinian-Israeli directors of No Other Land, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m., KBOO makes everything metal. The Metal March returns again in 2025, featuring 10 hours of live bands and DJ sets from your favorite KBOO metal hosts. March 4th and support metal on KBOO. Text KBOO to 44321 or go to kboo.fm/give to donate and tune in to the Metal March Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Metal takes over the airwaves for the Metal March Metal Marathon, only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Multnomah County Jail neared capacity 5 times so far this year.
State and regional leaders want answers on the budget shortfall in the Multnomah County Homelessness Department.
And federal cuts for the Department of Fish and Wildlife could put Oregon animals and habitats at risk.
I'm Kate Chase.
And I'm Danny Shy. The Multnomah County Jail neared capacity 5 times so far this year, reaching 90%, the threshold to send out a yellow alert. When the jail is 95% full, the sheriff's office must start releasing the lowest risk people. Why did the jails get so close to that threshold? There's a lot of reasons. holiday and snow day closures played a part. Sheriff Nicole Morrissey O'Donnell says the lack of available public defenders contributed, as did a new rule on which people must stay in jail before they are arraigned by the court. If someone faces a felony charge or a misdemeanor charge for a crime against a person, the jail has to continue to hold them until their court date. The order from the presiding county judge also requires that people must stay in jail if they have three or more pending cases in the state, or if they've been arrested more than once in 2 days. The jail must also continue to keep anyone arrested for a felony or misdemeanor charge against a person, if they were on formal supervision, or anyone who was arrested and failed to appear to court more than 5 times in the past 3 years. Judge Judith Matsurazo said the rule was to stop revolving door of people who are arrested, released, and never return to court. Right now, the Multnomah County Jail can hold 1,130 people, and there are more dorms available, but not enough funding to cover the larger population. Sheriff Morrissey O'Donnell may ask the county for more money to fund more sheriff deputies to cover more beds. The county faces a $21 million shortfall in its general fund.
Monday, March 3rd is the last day for Multnomah County residents to take the county's online budget feedback survey. It asks folks to drag and drop different county functions to express their priorities, which is most important, and within the category, which functions are the most important. The survey is online at link.multco.us/budget-survey-FY2026. County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson will propose her budget on April 24th. After that, the county will hold public hearings on the budget for residents to chime in on.
Governor Tina Kotek and Metro President Lynn Peterson wrote a letter to Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson questioning how a $100 million hole in the county homelessness budget could have happened. Vega Peterson dropped the news last month to the surprise of many of her elected colleagues. She called on the state and Metro to chip in to fill the county's budget. Metro President Peterson was taken aback, writing a harsh letter last Friday. In it, she questioned Vega Peterson's integrity and leadership, and demanded more insight into how Multnomah County is spending its supportive housing tax dollars. She wrote, quote, simply put, discovering a $104 million budget shortfall more than 7 months through the fiscal year should not go unnoticed and uninvestigated, end quote. That was last week. This week's letter from both Lynn Peterson and Governor Kotek calls for a line-by-line detail on the last 3 years of spending at the Joint Office of Homeless Services. All three levels of government, state, county, and metro, are facing budget cuts, from lower tax revenue and federal spending slashes by billionaire Elon Musk and the Trump administration. Whether Metro and the state can or are willing to fill in the homeless department's shortfall remains to be seen.
Multnomah County Commissioner Shannon Singleton said in a statement today that she has found other ways to fill in the Homeless Services Department budget hole. Singleton says $22 million in supportive housing tax dollars were requested for programs outside the Homeless Services Department. She says those should be put towards the shortfall instead. They were to be spent on things like the Victims Assistance Program at the District Attorney's Office and Addiction Services. They're related to the goal of the supportive housing tax, to end unsheltered homelessness, but not within the department. Singleton also references some reserve dollars identified by Homeless Services Department Director Dan Field. Combined, she says, the budget shortfall for the Homeless Services Department would be only $48 million. Singleton said in a statement, quote, "We need to do absolutely everything that we can to make our commitments on the shelter beds and housing services real. This is our job. It's what people elected us to do. We need to make it right," end quote. The Multnomah County Board of Commissioners meets regularly on Thursdays at 9:30 a.m.
Hillsborough broke ground on its first permanent houseless shelter today. When it's completed, it will be the second permanent shelter in Washington County. The facility will have 35 indoor congregate beds, meaning they'll be sharing a space, but it will also have 40 individual shelter pods that can have pets. It'll also have on-site meals, laundry, and round-the-clock housing navigation resources. The site has been used as a safe rest pod village a few different times over the last few years. The permanent shelter is expected to start operating this winter, but the county is still looking for a service provider to run the site. Hillsborough Mayor Beach Pace said in a statement, quote, The city of Hillsborough is committed to supporting efforts that provide compassionate care and pathways to housing while also addressing the impacts of homelessness on businesses in our community, end quote.
Environmentalists warn that firing over 400 employees from the Federal Department of Fish and Wildlife could have devastating impacts on Oregon's endangered species, as well as a loss of services for visitors to the state's wild places. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
The Department of Government Efficiency, led by billionaire Elon Musk, has ordered the federal government to fire 400 Department of Fish and Wildlife employees. Experts say the move could tremendously impact Oregon's endangered and threatened species. Noah Greenwald is with the Center for Biological Diversity. He says the cuts mean population surveys of the Northwest's iconic northern spotted owl have been paused, along with plans to remove invasive barred owls from their habitat. Greenwald says these measures are critical to the owl's survival.
These people are being let go have nothing to do with waste and fraud. These are people who are doing real work to conserve our endangered species and wildlife.
A federal judge found that the firings are likely illegal, but it is unclear if employees will be rehired or if future firings will stop. The Center for Biological Diversity filed a Freedom of Information request with every region of the Department of Fish and Wildlife to get more information about the impact of the changes. Greenwald says that, along with harm to wildlife, cuts to staff could mean a lack of services for people visiting Oregon's wild places this spring and summer.
We could have overflowing toilets. We could have traffic problems that are unabated. There could be rescues that are needed that won't happen.
Proponents of the cuts say the employees were primarily probationary, meaning they were recently hired or promoted, so losing their positions will not mean a loss of essential services. Greenwald says new people often get the most done, including writing recovery plans for threatened species. He warns that as many as a million species are at risk of extinction in the coming decades.
These federal workers are at the front line of fighting that extinction crisis and ensuring that we have a livable future.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Speaker Johnson calls out Ukrainian President Zelensky while also calling Putin dangerous. Voting rights advocates are concerned about the SAVE Act's impact on civil rights, and some Democrats call for prioritizing rural and working class people. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
When we did the aid to Ukraine a year ago, the whole point was to position Ukraine for peace talks, to make sure that they could hold the line until President Trump returned to the White House.
House Speaker Mike Johnson blames Russian President Vladimir Putin for the war in Ukraine and calls him dangerous. But Johnson also says Volodymyr Zelensky's behavior at a heated White House meeting was shocking and says the Ukrainian president may have to resign. A handful of congressional Republicans are supporting Zelensky, with one accusing President Donald Trump of abandoning an ally. The New York Times is reporting that even before last week's public dispute, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth ordered a halt to all offensive cyber operations against Russia. The administration did not give the paper an explanation for the move. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer says the UK and France are preparing a peace plan.
This effort must have strong US backing. We're working with the US on this point, and let me be clear, we agree with the president on the urgent need for a durable peace. Now we need to deliver together.
Meanwhile, Democrats like Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut say the White House is acting as an arm of the Kremlin.
Every single day, you hear from the National Security Advisor, from the President of the United States, from his entire national security team, Kremlin talking points. For the last week, the White House has been pretending as if Ukraine started this war.
The Safeguard American Voter Eligibility, or SAVE Act, is expected to be up for a vote in the House soon. Voting rights advocates say by requiring a birth certificate or passport from anyone who wants to register, it could deny the ballot to millions of citizens. Carrie Dermick with All Voting is Local Action says it's supposed to stop a kind of vote fraud that all but never happens.
This bill is really trying to solve a problem that does not exist. And then I think also what's going to happen if this does go into place is that online voter registration will be decimated by this legislation.
A coalition of rural progressive democratic organizations is urging the new chair of the National Party to invest more in rural and working class communities. Anthony Flaccavento with the Rural Urban Bridge Initiative says it's time for the party to start prioritizing these often forgotten groups.
If we don't begin to win back a significant part of these rural and working class people, then Trump will more than likely survive these 4 years intact in the sense of getting his policies enacted.
Flaccavento calls the resistance reignited by Trump being back in the White House promising, but adds it has to reach beyond highly educated liberal folks. Finally, Andrew Cuomo is entering what looks to be a contentious race for New York City mayor. Cuomo resigned from the governor's office 4 years ago over sexual misconduct allegations, but says current mayor Eric Adams has led the city into crisis. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A proposed bill in the Washington legislature would give youth incarcerated in the state a second chance before they're transferred to adult prison. The Youth Hope Act is currently in committee. Isabel Charlet reports.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, potential human remains have been discovered at a landfill site near Winnipeg, and families of two Indigenous women who
working their way through Olympia focus on reforming Washington's juvenile legal system, including one known as the Youth Hope Act. The act would give eligible young offenders transitioning from juvenile detention to adult correctional facilities a chance to petition a board for early release. Diego Gonzalez attends Seattle University and is on the Youth Advisory Board for Team Child, a nonprofit organization backing the act. He says youth offenders deserve a second chance.
That's basically what this bill is just trying to do. It's trying to let somebody grow and live past the worst thing they've done as a youth.
Critics of the act are concerned about the risks of releasing offenders too soon. Research shows youth incarceration most often increases reoffending rates while impeding young people's educational and career success. The Youth Hope Act is currently in the Senate Ways and Means Committee. For serious crimes, children under 18 in Washington may be tried as adults and face 20 to 30 years in custody. Arthur Longworth is a policy manager at Team Child. He says Washington's determinate juvenile sentencing system does not leave room for youth to be rehabilitated.
Judges are basically handcuffed. They have to follow a guideline matrix for what a young person is sentenced to without considering circumstances too much.
Gonzalez got involved with Team Child after his friend Sunshine Timmons was sentenced to 20 years for a crime she committed at 17. Timmons is now in the custody of the Department of Corrections. Gonzalez believes she grew in juvenile rehabilitation and, given a chance, could be doing good work in her community.
But instead, they were forced to go to DOC, and it's a bad place. That does not help the people there.
About 50,000 youth are in confinement in the United States. That number is 60% lower than 25 years ago, thanks in part to growing awareness of the negative impacts of incarceration on young people. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on the Earth School PDX. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, it did happen here. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 44 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a high of 53. Today in history, in 1986, Australia becomes fully independent from the United Kingdom through the Australia Act of 1986. The quote of the day is from French philosopher Emile Chartier, commonly known as Alain. Born this day in 1868, he wrote, quote, "Everybody continually tries to get away with as much as he can. And society is a marvelous machine which allows decent people to be cruel without realizing it."
Potential human remains have been found at a Winnipeg landfill. they could be the remains of two indigenous victims of a serial killer. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, potential human remains have been discovered at a landfill site near Winnipeg, and families of two Indigenous women who fought to have the landfill searched are hopeful that their struggle was not in vain. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the two women were victims of a convicted serial killer.
The Prairie Green landfill just outside Winnipeg has been the site of a search since December. It's where the remains of Morgan Harris and Mercedes Myron are believed to have been buried. The former government of Manitoba and the police rejected calls to search the site, in part because of asbestos and toxic material at the location, and they said there was no guarantee the remains would be found. Wab Ganu is the premier of Manitoba and spoke to family members of the victims.
I hope this is in some way a vindication, because you've been saying the whole time that we should move ahead with the search. Now we found what the experts tell us are human remains. There are two forensic anthropologists on site. They both kind of double-checked the work here, and they said these are human remains. And so now the RCMP, the chief medical examiner, are going to be doing the identification process.
Canoe says officials don't yet know if the remains are in fact the victims of the families. That process could take a couple of weeks. In a statement, the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs says the discovery is a painful but significant moment in the fight for justice. AMC Grand Chief Kyra Wilson says the families deserve answers and deserve to lay their loved ones to rest with the dignity and respect that has so often been denied to Indigenous women. Jeremy Skibitzky was convicted last July of four counts of first-degree murder in the killings of four Indigenous women in Winnipeg in 2022. The possible remains found recently could be that of Harris and Myron. He was also found guilty in the deaths of Rebecca Comtois and a still unidentified woman known only as Buffalo Woman. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A new report shows North Dakota's five tribal colleges contribute nearly $170 million to the state's economy. The data was issued by the North Dakota Tribal College System. The report indicates between 2022 and 23, North Dakotans saw added tax revenue and public sector savings of more than $30 million. Executive Director of the College System, Dr. Tracy Bauer, says alumni add even more economic activity when they work in their communities after graduation. Tribal college advocates see this as positive impacts, but there's concern about Trump administration actions. Bauer says tribal colleges are largely funded by federal grants. She warns a lot might change if federal cuts reach North Dakota's tribal colleges.
It's going to possibly lead to staff layoffs, increases in tuition to kind of make up some of that lost funding, even campus program closures.
The American Indian College Fund stresses that tribal colleges should be exempt from executive orders due to treaty and trust obligations of the federal government. The College Fund's president and CEO, Cheryl Crazy Bull, says as the uncertainty unfolds, organizations like hers are preparing to help the schools adjust.
Providing resources for institutions to hire adjunct faculty or helping students with transfer programming.
The leaders say tribal colleges and universities were set up to provide a more cultural and welcoming learning environment, while giving students flexibility to overcome barriers to enrolling. Meanwhile, of the 37 tribal higher education institutions across the country, only two are federally operated, and they're feeling the impacts of the Trump administration's federal workforce reductions. Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas, and the Southwestern Indian Polytechnic Institute in Albuquerque, New Mexico. While tribal higher education advocates urge for exemptions, Haskell students have been holding protests. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Americans are increasingly relying on dollar stores to feed their families. But these stores don't always have selections for those looking to eat more sustainably. Simone Perez has more.
Healthier and more climate-friendly food is on the table when diets are discussed, but sometimes hard to find. It's not easy for those with low incomes who may be living in food deserts with limited grocery options. Americans are relying more on so-called dollar stores to do their grocery shopping. Rachel Santo with the nonprofit World Resources Institute says where people can shop has an outsized role on their diets.
Their choices are based on what is around them. Therefore, food retailers and other outlets where we purchase food are really important in driving kind of the general direction of our diets.
The Center for Science for the Public Interest finds that dollar stores offer limited healthy food options, yet these stores are relied upon more heavily in Black, Latino, rural, and low-income communities. Eating more sustainably begins with the food supply meeting demands of consumers. Santos says every person deserves food that is nutritious and also good for the planet.
Having more healthier and more climate-friendly options at stores and other retail outlets is the first step to increasing access to those foods. The cost, the quality, how convenient they are, the variety, and whether they are culturally relevant are also key.
Daphne Altima Johnson with the Johns Hopkins University's Center for a Livable Future says eating sustainably is not a matter of a person spending double their grocery budget.
Sustainable eating is just not for the wealthy. We think we have to go to the Whole Foods, we got to go to the stores. It's for everyone. Use what you have that's available and make changes that works for you. It doesn't mean spending more. It's just about making the most out what's available.
She adds that eating a meatless meal once a week, getting canned vegetables when fresh produce isn't available, or making a meal last longer with added legumes are great places to start. This story is based on original reporting by Darna Noor for Sentient and is part of a collaborative reporting project exploring a just and climate-friendly food system. I'm Simone Perez, Maryland News Connection.
Urban tree cover is an important part of a city's landscape, and it can help cities become more resilient to climate change. A new study from Public Exchange and a university, Southern California, finds that urban trees in Los Angeles mid-city absorb about 60% of CO2 during spring and summer days. As Suzanne Potter reports, that's more than scientists expected.
A new study shows that trees in mid-city Los Angeles absorb up to 60% of carbon dioxide emissions during spring and summer when the trees are most active. In 2021, researchers from the University of Southern California placed 12 sensors in central LA to monitor carbon dioxide levels. Professor Will Berylson with the USC Dornsife College of Letters, Arts, and Sciences says trees are surprisingly effective at lowering carbon dioxide levels in the air.
That whole input of CO2 from cars is predicted to be a certain level, but when we look for CO2, we find much less. And the reason is because this difference is due to uptake of CO2 by trees.
Berylson says emissions are like passengers on a train, in that wind moves pollution through the city, where some gets picked up and dropped off. The sensors measure the pollution in real time. The research, published in the journal Environmental Science and Technology, shows that trees absorb about 30% of carbon dioxide, averaged over 24-hour periods, over a year. So clean energy, improved public transit, and broader emissions reductions are still needed. Berylson says the sensors, called a carbon census array, will track carbon dioxide levels for years to come.
The city of LA is always committed to reducing emissions, and it isn't clear how they're going to keep track of whether their emissions have actually lowered or not. But we've got a way to now track emissions and quantify emissions.
The sensor network is now being expanded, with 12 additional sensors reaching out to Santa Monica on the west side of the city. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, March 3rd, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Lisa Loving and David Rosenberg. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Eric Tegedoff, Simone Perez, Suzanne Potter, Alex Gonzalez. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Kate Chase.
And I'm Danny Shy. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. We'll be right back.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. Are you looking for third spaces, places you can hang out with other people for fun? The New Earth School PDX is part of a local movement in creating more third spaces. They're crowdsourcing information as a mutual aid project. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with Fern Allen, founder and director of the program.
I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest is Fern Capella Allen of the New Earth School PDX in Southeast Portland. She's crowdsourcing knowledge as a mutual aid project. And Fern, I know that there was a thing that was called the free school movement that started in the 1960s, and it was for kids. But this is for anybody, and this is something that you and your community figured out. What is this project, and what made you start it?
Thank you. Yes. So that's probably true that the 1960s, the dawning of the Age of Aquarius, probably brought in the free school movement in the beginning. And then in the early 2000s, here in Portland, in our little Beirut anarchist era, we had something called free school as well. And it was completely free. And it was the early days of the internet. You're just put in a calendar online somewhere, and people would put on a class they wanted to teach for free, and then people would go on the calendar and show up to that class for free. And so you could take any class you wanted that was available, and you could teach any class you felt like teaching. So it was a really kind of wild and cool movement that a lot of us took part in back in the day, 20 years ago or more. And then last year, I got the cosmic urge to start it up again, because I feel like right now with Pluto entering Aquarius, I think that we are now at this next phase of the Age of Aquarius, really, you know? And we are here creating something called New Earth School, actually, now. And it's called New Earth School, and it's PDX is here in Portland, because it's not completely free as it was back in the early 2000s. It is $5 a